Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-o! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Welcome to Creating a Family, talk about infertility and adoption. Today we're going to be talking about the all-important topic of advocacy, infertility advocacy. This is something that we hold dear to our hearts, and quite frankly, anybody who is touched by infertility or knows someone who is touched by infertility should care deeply about this topic as well. I think you are really going to enjoy today's show. Here's a sample of what you're going to hear.
The infertility community has a strong stake in what's happening with the Affordable Care Act or the American Health Care Act, which seeks to replace that. While infertility was not a mandated benefit under the terms of the Affordable Care Act, there are certain provisions of the law that have benefited the infertility community a great deal, I think, and which could be endangered by passage of something that replaced it.
I'm Dawn Davenport. I am the director of Creating a Family. We are the National Infertility and Adoption Education and Support Nonprofit, and you can find us online at creatingafamily.org. One of the things we do here at Creating a Family is one of the main things we do is create resources, and we create lots of resources. But in particular, I want to tell you about a multimedia guide that we have that I think you will really like. It is titled How to Choose an Infertility Clinic, and it's just chock full of resources. It's 50-some-odd pages, lots of resources, questions to ask, things to look for, how to understand the success stats that the clinics quote. I really think you are going to enjoy this. To find it, you can go to our website, creatingafamily.org. and hover over the word resources and click on e-guides, and it will take you right there. We are a weekly radio show, and we use the podcast model. That way you can listen whenever and wherever you want. You can also subscribe, and whatever device it is you are listening to us now, you can subscribe. And if you're listening through your computer, you can click on the subscribe button on that page on our radio page, and it will take you to various resources for subscribing. The Creating a Family radio show is underwritten by our corporate sponsor, Ferring Pharmaceutical. We thank them for their continued support for making this show happen. This show, as well as all the resources provided by Creating a Family, could not and would not happen without the generous support from our gold sponsors, who believe in our mission of providing unbiased education and support to those struggling to create a family. Some of our wonderful gold sponsors include Cellmatics. They are the next generation women's health company, transforming how women approach their lifelong fertility journey through genomics and big data. Their products include Fertilome, the world's first comprehensive genetic test that reveals what a woman's DNA says about her reproductive health. We also have Manhattan Cryobank. They are dedicated to helping clients have healthy babies by analyzing a client's DNA in combination with the DNA of prospective sperm donors to provide the client with a personalized catalog of safer donor matches. And Reproductive Medicine Associates of New Jersey. They are a recognized scientific and patient care leader in the field of infertility. With 10 offices and 21 physicians throughout New Jersey, they maintain an IVF delivery rate well above the national average. And in addition to the gold sponsors I just mentioned, we also have other sponsors whose generosity allows us to bring you this show. We ask that when choosing an infertility service provider, please consider choosing one from the Creating Family directories, which you can find on our service provider page of our website. When you use these directories, you support those who support us, and we thank you. Today, we're going to be talking about infertility advocacy. Our guests to talk about this topic are Sean Tipton. He is Chief Advocacy and Policy Officer at the American Society for Reproductive Medicine. We also have Betsy Campbell. She is Director of Constituent Engagement with Resolve, the National Infertility Association. And we have Lee Collins. She is a lawyer, a former infertility patient, and an infertility activist. She serves on the Resolve Board of Directors. Welcome, Sean, Betsy, and Lee to Creating a Family.
Thank you, Don.
Thanks so much.
All right. There is so much to talk about in the area of infertility advocacy. So just I'm going to let our audience have kind of a clue what the framework is going to be. We're going to talk today about federal legislation. Then we're going to also talk about state legislation. Then we're going to move into talking about infertility insurance, access to care, and then some specific things that we want to get you guys involved in, things that you can specifically do to help advocate. So that's kind of the very, very general framework we're going to follow. We're going to start with federal legislation, and we actually have a question. I told you guys ahead of time that I doubted we would get many questions for advocacy shows. It's not something that usually will elicit a lot of write-in questions, but we did get one from Rochelle. She says, thank you for this show. I saw a few months ago that you posted about some federal legislation that was going to say that life begins at conception and would imperil IVF. And then she said, WTF, so I'm sure what she means there is what the fudge. She says, I care about this a lot. Can you please address this on the show? Thank you all for what you're doing to help keep us up to date. All right, Sean, let's start with, I believe that Rochelle is referring to the personhood legislation. So is there a federal legislation that's being proposed that would define personhood to begin at the moment of conception?
There are actually a couple pieces of legislation that have been introduced that would do that. Now, I think before people get too worked up about this, I would point out that these bills have been introduced in every Congress for the past 16 years, and none of them have even gotten a hearing. And there's no hearing scheduled yet for these pieces of legislation at this point. Here we are in the middle of March. So, you know, there's something to certainly pay attention to. We will monitor them. I think we know what committees they'll go to, and we will know if they ever get scheduled for a hearing, and we'll kick into action at that point. But I think it's important that people keep in mind there's a whole lot of legislation introduced in Congress and in their state legislatures that's mostly not going to go anywhere. So one of the challenges, I think, for would-be advocates is to sort through what's introduced and that's all that's ever going to happen with it and what's going to actually try to move and become and move forward to law. So the federal personhood measures are showing no signs of movement as of yet, but we will certainly be paying close attention.
Let me stop here, and I'm going to mention this resource more than once. Resolve, the National Infertility Association, has on their website a Center for Infertility Justice. And it is one of the best places you can go, probably the best place you can go, to find out more information about all of what we're going to be talking about today. And they do a very good job of helping you do what Sean just mentioned, which is winnow out what to worry about and what not to worry about. And they cover both the federal and the state level. So you can go to resolve.org, and on the front page there will be a link to that, and it will take you to pages that will discuss what's happening. And usually they also give you specific information of steps you can take if you want to get involved, which we hope that we inspire you to want to do. All right. So, Sean, okay, so personhood, Rochelle, from what we're hearing, nothing much is happening on that, but it is being watched by ASRM and Resolve, and Creating a Family will be supporting their efforts, and we'll do our best to let you know what they tell us to let you know. So, Sean, other than that, what else is happening on the federal level that people should be aware of?
Well, I think obviously the infertility community has a strong stake in what's happening with the Affordable Care Act or the American Health Care Act, which seeks to replace that. While infertility was not a mandated benefit under the terms of the Affordable Care Act, there are certain provisions of the law that have benefited the infertility community a great deal. I think, and which could be endangered by passage of something that replaces it. So things like a lifetime cap and a pre-existing condition protections. In some states where that had a good infertility mandate that existed and who implemented their own exchange programs, there very much was a benefit for the infertility patient that could, in fact, be endangered as the Affordable Care Act perhaps goes away. So I think the infertility community needs to pay close attention to those measures.
Okay, that's fascinating, and certainly topical right now as to what's happening this week and next week. All right, so other than the American Healthcare Act, or what we are sure to start calling it, Trump Care, what else is happening that that we need to be cognizant of?
Well, it becomes difficult to figure out, again, what's really going to happen. But what we know is going to happen is Congress and the administration are going to have to make some decisions about funding and funding of government agencies. And the early indications we've gotten, the outline of a budget that the Trump administration put out last week, should concern the infertility community in a couple ways. It very much guts some of the public health programs that do a lot of good for the infertility world. So specifically, it proposes a 20% cut in the budget to the National Institutes of Health, who fund a great deal of medical research in general, and that includes research on reproductive disorders and infertility. And so that's very much something to pay attention to and be worried about. It was fairly non-informative in terms of what its impact might be on other public health programs that could impact infertility. So, it said it was going to make the industry community who's regulated by FDA pay higher fees, and that could discourage some innovation. It didn't really say what their money was going to be. It was absolutely silent on what the CDC budget was going to look like. And as you know, the CDC plays a strong role in monitoring outcomes of assisted reproductive technologies. And it was silent on most of the other things, but it was clear that the Department of HHS, of Health and Human Services, was going to face a large cut. So those are potentially very concerning developments for the infertility community.
Okay. All right. Anything else on the federal front?
No, I think those are the most important things for now, at least.
Okay, yeah. Now, is there specific things that you would want people to be doing right now about? It seems premature on any of these, but maybe not, perhaps not. Is it premature for us to be taking action now? Lee, let me ask you that question. Should infertility, do you want to rally us around doing anything on the federal level right now, Lee?
Well, absolutely, we do, Dawn. The political climate, as Sean hinted, is kind of uncertain now. There is talk about doing things that we have never, as an infertility community, faced before. And the truth is that if we aren't out there talking about infertility, talking about our needs and interests in building families, no one else will be talking about it. It's really up to us. And so I know we're going to talk about it more, but Resolve, in partnership with ASRM, is holding an advocacy day in May, May 17th and 18th in Washington, D.C. And there's going to be a lot of excitement and work building up to that day, but that is a day when we want hundreds of people to come to Capitol Hill to speak out on behalf of the infertility community.
Perhaps this year more than any year in the recent future, recent past, it would seem to me that this is a good day for a good year for people to turn out in droves. Would you agree that this is an important year, Lee?
You are so right. It's important for all the reasons that Sean just articulated, and it's also true that it seems that people across the country are really excited and looking for ways to have an impact, to make sure that important policies in our country remain, that people are, you know, taken care of, and they're chomping at the bit to get involved. And my goodness, the infertility community needs it. This is one of those times where if you're not part of the steamroller, you may well be part of the road.
All right. Well said. And we think we all want to be part of the steamroller, because the road's position doesn't sound very comfortable.
No.
All right. You know, I think oftentimes people don't realize that some of the most impactful legislation for their lives, and particularly for their fertility and fertility treatment, happen at the state level. So, Betsy, I realize that we don't have the time to talk about all 50 states, and perhaps all 50 states don't have anything at play at this moment. But can you talk about some of the highlights of what's happening that is drawing, I guess, both concern and praise? Let's not be all negative focused. So we could talk about things that might be good that's happening on the state level as well, but also things that are of concern and that you and Resolve and ASRM are paying close attention to.
Yes, you are absolutely right, Dawn. There is good and bad legislation at the state level. We'll start with the bad, since we've already learned a bit about personhood from Sean. Like Congress, a dozen states so far this year have introduced personhood bills that would impact access to IVF medical treatments and how doctors would be able to treat their patients. You can imagine that giving microscopic embryos the same rights as people puts the practice of IVF at risk. And IVF is the standard of care for infertility, and we believe that patients should be able to receive the standard of care no matter which state they live in. Unfortunately, at Resolve, we're seeing an increase in personhood bills being introduced. So far in 2017, we are tracking 16 personhood bills in 12 states, and that compares to 7 personhood bills in 2016. So in the past, none of these personhood bills have passed, although some have come very close, and certainly at the state level, it's much more likely that they could pass. So we are very vigilant about fighting those personhood bills.
Okay, excellent. And again, for our listeners who are wondering if their state is involved, you can go to the Center for Infertility Justice on the Resolve site, resolve.org, and they specifically have a section on personhood legislation, so you can find out the status of your state. Okay, excellent. I'm glad you brought up personhood, since I am not exactly sure if Rochelle was speaking. She says she was speaking of federal legislation, so perhaps, but she should also be concerned about state legislation.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else is happening other than personhood? What else is happening on the state level?
Well, on the negative side, again, we are seeing some anti-surrogacy efforts, and I think it's important to define what we mean when we say surrogacy. I'm referring to gestational surrogacy. So that's where another woman who is not genetically linked to the offspring carries the pregnancy for a woman who, because of medical reasons, is unable to carry the pregnancy. So she may have heart disease or lupus. She may not have a uterus. She may suffer from recurrent miscarriages. So she is unable to carry the pregnancy. So we are seeing legislation in a couple of states that threatens gestational surrogacy. Arkansas is trying to ban compensated surrogacy, and in Minnesota, attempts to restrict access to gestational carrier surrogacy have been relentless. So at Resolve, we are all about access to care. That's what guides our advocacy work. And so access to care to us means access to all family building options for anyone struggling to build a family. So we believe that everyone should have access to all the options available and that these options should not be restricted by legislators.
Okay, and so only on a couple of fronts do we see, you mentioned two states that are contemplating, and I'm glad you pointed out that I think there is perhaps not so much in the infertility community, but certainly in the general public, there is a confusion between what is called traditional surrogacy, which is where the woman's egg is, the surrogate's egg is used, therefore she is biologically genetically connected to the child, versus gestational surrogate, where the intended mom's egg or a donor egg is used.
Right, and gestational
yes.
surrogacy is much more common, and there are very good guidelines by the American Society for Reproductive Medicine that the clinics are following. The only caution, even though there are only two states, unfortunately at the state level, it seems whenever a bad bill is introduced, there are a lot of copycat bills. So we are being very vigilant and monitoring, you know, a lot of the states.
Well,
because often some of the same groups are behind this anti-surrogacy legislation.
Would that mean that if there was good legislation passed, that that is also copycatted, or does it seem to only work out that the negative is copycatted?
Yeah.
At least with my
let's
children,
hope
that
so.
Narrative is always. Yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, let's hope so, and we do try to share whatever sample good legislation we have in other states, where we have volunteers who are interested in working with their lawmakers to get good legislation introduced, and a lot of that has to do with the insurance mandates that you mentioned earlier. So to turn to good legislation, so far there are 15 states that have insurance mandates that provide some sort of infertility insurance coverage. This year, a few more states have proposed legislation to add infertility insurance coverage. We're also working in a number of states to improve the existing mandates and to broaden coverage in those mandates. So, for example, in New York, right now, IVF is excluded from coverage. So we are trying very hard to get IVF covered because, as we mentioned, it's the standard of care for infertility and should be covered like most standards of care are for other diseases. So Resolve is actually sponsoring a state advocacy day in New York on April 25th in Albany. So, again, it's an opportunity for people to get involved to improve the mandate in that state.
Excellent. Oh, good. And we will, it's coming up. I'm making myself a note. We will make certain that we share about that to our audience and to our social media community, too, because we have a number of people in New York. And I'm sure that they will want to come to the New York Advocacy Day on April 25th.
Thank you so much.
Any other state legislation? We've talked about personhood. We've talked about insurance, and that was on the positive side. We've talked about a couple of states who are trying to ban gestational surrogacy. Anything else that's on the horizon or currently happening on the state level that we need to be aware of, Betsy?
Yes. Actually, I'd like to just share a little bit about fertility preservation. I think people would be very surprised to learn that if you need to preserve your sperm and eggs before undergoing cancer treatment, it isn't covered by insurance. So you get this devastating diagnosis of cancer. You're then told as part of your treatment that it may impact your ability to have kids. But we do have ways for you to preserve your fertility. But, oh, by the way, it's not covered by insurance. And you've got this very short window of time to act, to preserve. And for a lot of people, they don't have the funds to do it, and the insurance is not there. So Resolve is trying to fix this very, disturbing set of circumstances. So we're pushing several bills in state legislatures to mandate that fertility preservation be covered by health insurance. And we're partnering with cancer organizations as part of the Coalition to Protect Parenthood After Cancer in order to try to get these bills introduced and passed in as many states as possible.
Excellent. Yeah. And you're so correct. We've done almost every year we do a show dealing with cancer and infertility. And one of the tragic things is that so often people, number one, don't know about it. But then, as you point out, they have a very short window to act. And if their insurance doesn't cover it, they don't have time to try to figure out their options. So I am so glad to hear that that's something that you guys are working on. All right. So before we turn away from go ahead, Sean.
Before we leave states, I do want to say something for anybody who's an existing or a budding legislative process nerd. In Arkansas, they've got a fascinating bill going through that would call for a constitutional convention to establish personhood, which is a very interesting model in and of itself. But they also, this bill has had a history of losing. And then apparently the leadership, the committee chair and the chamber leadership can expunge a losing vote and try again as many times as it takes until they can try to get it passed. So it's been an absolutely fascinating and somewhat disturbing process to watch. But, you know, we may be looking – now, of course, there have to be, I think, 37 other states who have joined this call, but it's an interesting development nonetheless.
Wow. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it seems like that would be up for at least some judicial challenge, but perhaps, I guess not, or hasn't been yet. All right, are we, Betsy, let me, last touching base, can we leave the states now? Is there anything else that we want to touch, make sure that people know about states before we move on?
I think that very well covers it. Thank you. I mean, I would just close by saying we're monitoring legislation in about 24 states in D.C. And so, again, resolve.org keeps tabs on all this and also provides tools to take action where action's needed.
Yeah, exactly. And you can get that on the resolve.org website, and it's easy to find from their homepage. You are listening to Creating a Family. Today we're talking about infertility advocacy. Clout now ranks us as either changes daily, so we're either number, last I checked, we were number two online influencer in the area of fertility. We primarily hang out on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest, and we would love to have you join us. There are three ways to connect with us on Facebook. You can connect with me, Dawn.Davenport1. You can also like our Facebook page, which is, of course, Creating a Family, or you can join our very large, very active support group, which you can find at facebook.com/groups/creatingafamily, or the easiest way is to just type in Creating a Family in the search the Facebook search box, and the page and the group both pop up, so you can like the page and join the group. It is a closed group, so you do have to request to join, and we have to admit you. But we would love to have you join us. We are an active and growing community. The more the merrier, so please join us. All right. I want to shift to something that I think is it sounds so mundane, but I think it is truly one of the most important things that we can do as a person, as a group of people who care about infertility and coverage and access to care for everyone. And that is the idea of getting our employers to cover infertility, because our employer, so many people, and I'm hoping that, Lee, you can, and maybe you might even know what percentage of people are covered under an employee-based plan. But we have a voice there, and it's grassroots advocacy at its very best. So, Lee, let's talk some about employer-based plans and what they are and why it's important for us to be involved in asking for coverage.
Yes, a really, really important issue, Dawn, and I'm going to do my best to make it, you know, informative and not dry at all.
You are talking about insurance, so you have an uphill
climb. I am talking
climb,
about
but...
insurance. I mean, how dry can you get? But here's the thing. One of the things we know about infertility in the United States is that it is like an iceberg. So many people, 1 in 8, over 7 million people, struggle with infertility in this country. But only the tip of the iceberg of people are actually able to gain access to the care that they need to treat their medical condition. And one of the chief barriers that people face when they are seeking to get care and health care is a set of economic barriers. One of the things, though, so as Betsy mentioned, you know, there are a number of states that have mandate laws, that's what they're called, to require insurance policies to include an infertility benefit. Now, adding to those state laws is definitely, it's worth trying, but it's time-consuming, and it's difficult to get a law passed in a state. But we have discovered employers, it turns out they can voluntarily add infertility to their employee benefits in many cases. And when that happens, a whole workplace is transformed and people can gain access to care and they can get, they'll be able now to afford to get treatment for their infertility. So Resolve has turned this into a whole initiative that we call Coverage at Work. And one of the reasons it has the potential to be really, really effective is that Resolve and some partners out there did a survey of employers who voluntarily added coverage for infertility, and for the majority of them, the reason they added the infertility benefit was because an employee asked them for it.
Exactly.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It turns out many employers don't really know what benefits they're offering and where the gaps are. And there can be a really, really constructive conversation between employees and employers about covering infertility.
And so, it's something that you don't have, you know who, that you probably already know who to even talk with, or you certainly know the department to go to. So it's not perhaps as daunting as some of the other advocacy things that we talk about. These are people you know and you work with, and it's a matter of, if you don't ask, the answer is always no. So why not ask?
You're exactly right. Ordinarily, it is going to be the HR department at most employers. And this is something that has been done successfully. We have Resolve volunteers who have gone to their employers, and lo and behold, in, you know, a pretty reasonable amount of time, their employer says, oh, we didn't realize it wasn't covered. They changed the policy. And so because this is actually a tried and true practice, Resolve's website has information and tools that anyone can use to start this conversation with his or her employer, including some really nice empirical evidence so that the employer can see the benefits of adding infertility as part of their employee benefits.
Yeah, because one of the things that you have found is, I mean, one of the arguments you would imagine that employers would say, oh, gosh, I don't want to add infertility coverage because it's going to shoot up our rates and it's going to cost mm-hmm. us all more money. But you found some interesting, you've got some interesting information that actually isn't true.
You are so right, Dawn. The Mercer company, which is, you know, a big giant in the insurance field, surveyed a bunch of employers who had added infertility as an employee benefit, and it asked them if adding this benefit had significantly added to their costs. 91% of employers said no, it did not add significantly to their costs
right at
all. It is so reasonably priced. It's not that many people who are going to need, you know, interventions that are expensive. Of course, insurance companies have negotiated low prices with insurance, with employers. And so it turns out that adding this benefit adds very little, if any, cost to the coverage that employers offer.
Right. And oftentimes, if and on your website, that information as well as the source for it is given. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, presenting that information when you're making your request is it makes it a done deal. It makes it a why would they object if there's because their concerns are that it's going to be too expensive. That's going to generally be what their concern is. So go armed with data when you go, and all of that data is readily available for anyone. Lee, can you give us, I'm probably putting you on the spot, do you happen to know, I just went to the Resolve site and I'm not seeing it really quickly, how people can access the, how to talk with their employer about, hang on a minute, it's under, I think it's right here, under family building options, hover over it, and then you click on insurance coverage.
Insurance coverage. And then toward the bottom of the page, it says getting insurance coverage at work.
Got it. Okay, so that's how resolve.org. Hover over the word family building options and click on insurance coverage, and it will take you there. Excellent. Thank you so much. We've been kicking around the term a lot, access to care, but I want to spend a little more time talking, but we've talked about the financial barriers to access to care, and when we've done surveys, that has been the number one, probably not surprisingly, the number one barrier to care that we have seen. We've also done a fair amount of research recently because we're having a real effort for this 2017 to work on access to care. So we certainly have heard that finances, and we've talked some about that. But, Sean, let's talk about some of the other barriers to care that ASRM is working on and trying to break down to make care more available for everyone.
Sure. So a couple of years ago now, as we headed into a five-year strategic plan that we're now in the middle of, as we surveyed our members to see what they thought we ought to be doing and what their needs and frustrations in some cases were, access to care loomed very large. The healthcare providers, the physicians and nurses and our other members are unhappy when they see patients who they think can help and those patients can't get to them. And so we wanted to take a look and see what we could do to help with that. And we've talked about some of the obvious solutions. I mean, everybody assumes that it's an economic and, in this country, an insurance barrier primarily. And that is certainly important. And we are certainly working on some of those solutions as we've talked about. But we also looked at some other things because we really wanted to say, okay, where can we have an impact? Because it's going to be, you know, we're not going to pass a nationally mandated access to everybody who needs it infertility insurance program in this political environment. It's just not going to happen. So we need to look at other things. So we're looking at scientific opportunities. So we had a summit in Washington, D.C., invited about 100 people from all over the world to come and talk about access to care issues. And a piece of that was to explore, are there scientific opportunities which could yield new technologies that might be less expensive and more accessible? So we're pursuing some of those. That means encouraging research, having prize papers and recognition for people who are engaging in this kind of research, and we're going to start spending some money and directing some money to grants in grant form to researchers who are working on these kind of things. I also thought one of the really interesting and important things that came out of that summit were the non-economic barriers. So what we see is even in some of the northern European countries where there's universal access to infertility therapies, the dropout rate is still really high. And that means you have to look at some of the social factors, the psychological factors, the cultural factors, and see if we can take some of that on. So it was a real eye-opening experience, I think, for a lot of our members who, particularly American members, who feel like the only barrier is an economic one, and that's just not true.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're bringing that up because you are exactly right. We hear things, and actually there's not a lot of research, but there is some research that would actually support this. And what we hear from our audience and our communities, things such as, quite frankly, just inability to share bad news or not knowing how and feeling unsupported and people leaving because of that. Misunderstanding their prognosis is another one that we see. A lack of information and a lack of ability, quite frankly, to explain some of the options in a way that people can understand it was another one that we saw. I don't know if this coincides with, Sean, some of what you have found, but we see all of those, and you're right. Most of us think that money is the only thing, but in fact it isn't.
And these are also things that I think perhaps lend themselves to some solutions. So we're trying to explore some of that, and you know, some of that's going to be helping providers work with patients. Some of that's going to be doing research more into those causes and figuring out how it is that you can communicate with patients to help them overcome these obstacles. And that seems just a little more manageable than this idea that we're going to have universal access for free for infertility treatments in the United States. You want to do something other than just kind of shrug your shoulders and go, gee, it's tough.
Well, exactly, And from our standpoint, these are things that, as an education-based organization, that we think, okay, now that's language we speak. We say that's something that we can wrap our arms around and figure out solutions to, both for the professionals as well as for patients directly. Okay, well, excellent. Thank you. Now we've talked about the need for those of us who care about who are infertile or who care about the infertile to speak up, to get involved. Because if we don't, we are silent and nothing will happen. So let's talk about some specific opportunities that are coming up. We've mentioned Advocacy Day, both on the federal level as well as one specific to New York. The New York one is April 25th. Lee, when is – I don't know that you mentioned – you may have mentioned the day. Can you tell us what the federal Advocacy Day is going to be, the 2017?
Yes, absolutely. So everyone is warmly invited to attend Advocacy Day, the day that we go to the Hill where we meet with our senators and our members of Congress, is Thursday, May 18th. There are there's another part of Advocacy Day that takes place the day before, which is obviously May 17th. I said that this year Resolve's Advocacy Day is taking place in partnership with ASRM. And during Wednesday, May 17th, ASRM is going to hold an advocacy academy in the afternoon from 1 to 5, the day before Advocacy Day. And then in the evening, I think it's from 5 to 7 p.m. on the 17th, there's also going to be a Resolve evening reception. Then starting, I think, promptly at about 7:30 a.m. on Thursday, May 18th, we gather for training on how to go and talk to your lawmakers, and then we disperse to Capitol Hill bearing our messages so that we can enlighten and educate our lawmakers about what's important for the infertility community.
And from what I hear, then you rejoin afterwards it's actually a pretty good time after the fact. Everybody gets together, compares notes and talks and has some real community both before and but in particular after the fact, I would imagine.
Yes. No, that's exactly right. We always have a reception. I think at this point we're known for our nacho chips at that reception afterwards, and people come back with incredible stories about, you know, the moving conversations that they were able to have with lawmakers or with legislative aides who are such important people who carry our issues back to our actual elected officials.
Excellent. Go ahead.
I'd love to tell you just a little bit more, if I could.
Sure.
Right now, we don't leave it to people to try to figure out what it is they want to say to lawmakers. We actually train our volunteer advocates, which is, you know, volunteers from all over the country. Last year, over 200 people came to Advocacy Day, current infertility patients, past patients, doctors, nurses, scientists, embryologists, members of the infertility industry. We all team up and we go down to Washington. This year, we expect to be talking to our lawmakers about our concerns with personhood bills. We just want our voices to be in there saying, no, you don't. We also, last year, we advocated for IVF to be a covered benefit in the Veterans Administration for certain wounded veterans. And the most exciting thing to tell you, Dawn, is that we got the law passed.
That was such a great day, wasn't it?
Oh, it was fantastic. Our advocacy paid off. And so this IVF for wounded veterans coverage is available for the next 2 years. And I believe that this year we're going to be fighting to make this a permanent benefit so that this will be available and we can just continue to build on, you know, making IVF available to everyone who needs it. And then finally, another issue that's on the menu is that there's a lot of talk in Washington right now about tax reform, and we're very concerned that the adoption tax credit could be in jeopardy. Tax reform proceeds. So we are asking everyone to come and to, you know, tell about how important the adoption tax credit has been and to urge its preservation. And you know, I know it might seem like a big deal to go to Washington. I mean, we have people who come from Alaska and California and Texas and Arizona. They come to Washington, D.C. This is an opportunity to go from, well, the way I looked at it, it was an opportunity for me to go from fighting for myself to fighting for everyone. It gave me a sense of power at a time when I could have felt helpless. So Advocacy Day, being around other people who are fighting this fight right alongside you, it can really shift your relationship to infertility where it becomes a source of your power. So we warmly, ASRM and Resolve, we warmly welcome and encourage everyone who can do it to come and be with us in Washington.
Excellent. Betsy, tell us also about National Infertility Awareness Week. That's the week we reserve every year to try to draw attention to the disease of infertility. So what's happening this year? Is there a theme, specific theme for NIAW?
Absolutely. So every April, the infertility community recognizes National Infertility Awareness Week. This year's dates are April 23rd to the 29th. It is the only federal health observance for infertility, and it was created by Resolve to raise public awareness about this disease and to get people involved in the cause. So this year's theme is Listen Up. So very appropriate for a radio show. Listen up. we want people to listen up when it comes to issues around infertility and family building, including the issues we've talked about today. There's nothing more powerful than sharing your personal story. And by sharing our stories, we not only call attention to the disease of infertility, we inspire others. We inspire our family members, our friends, healthcare professionals, even lawmakers to join our movement. So as we've said many times, Resolve has a website full of ways for everyone to get involved, including a toolkit for professionals, so that the entire family building community can work together to enhance public understanding of this disease and give it the attention that it deserves.
And then throughout the year, there are walks of hope where infertility and patients, as well as those who care about them, gather together. And this also brings awareness, as well as it's a fundraiser, but it also brings awareness to the disease of infertility. So where can people get information about upcoming Walks of Hope that might be in their neck of the woods, Betsy?
Yes, so at resolve.org, if you just do /walk of hope, you'll get the calendar for the year. I believe we have about 10 national walks planned, but we've also just added a new feature where you can do your own walk of hope. So we provide a toolkit for do-it-yourself walks. So basically, you can start your own walk of hope wherever you live. And it's just, these walks are 1 mile walks, very family friendly. And it's just a reminder to everyone that no one with infertility should walk alone. And that's why Resolve exists, to build that kind of community.
Excellent. All right, you are listening to Creating a Family. Today we're talking about infertility advocacy. I wanted to take this moment to tell you about a few more of our gold sponsors and to remind you that it is through their generous support that we're able to bring you this show. We have Fairfax Cryobank, a leader in sperm donation for over 25 years. They are dedicated to supplying updated, verified, and accurate medical and personal information on their donors. We have IntegraMed Fertility. They are the largest network of fertility practices in the country. By combining the latest innovations in the reproductive sciences with compassionate and customized treatment plans, IntegraMed practices are able to provide the very best possible care. And the law offices of James Fletcher Thompson. They are a South Carolina firm committed to adoption and assisted reproductive law, including a gestational surrogacy matching program. All right, I am wanting to save this topic for last because I just think it's a fascinating topic, and that is what's the intersection between infertility and politics? It seems like this is a really relevant year. We are all, I think, perhaps more attuned to politics this year. So it's relevant now, and I'm curious as to how infertility versus other diseases fare in the political world and that intersection. Lee Collins has actually done a TEDx talk on this topic. And so let me start with you. I have no doubt that Sean and Betsy will also have opinions. But Lee, let me start with you. What is the intersection between, shouldn't politics be completely excluded from something this as important as disease, disease awareness and disease treatment?
Well, perhaps in a certain kind of ideal world, politics wouldn't play into it. But the truth is, in the world we inhabit, virtually every disease, in addition to having its personal component, also has a political component. If you think about, walks to raise awareness for breast cancer or agitation to get good governmental funding for research on AIDS, that's the political side of disease and wellness in this country. And so infertility is not exempt from it. Unfortunately, I would say that where our disease intersects with politics, often it's on the negative side rather than the positive. There isn't a lot of funding for research on infertility, largely because of a law called the Dickey Wicker Amendment. And then there is a segment of the political world that is out to pass personhood bills and to perhaps they don't like IVF. They have an objection to it. So we end up being on the defensive. The chance to speak to TEDx Beacon Street about infertility and politics was an incredible opportunity to speak outside of our world, outside of the infertility world, about the injustice that we find when we're diagnosed with infertility, and to give some options to try to make, things a little fairer. So we talked about, you know, the Veterans Bill and also about the employer program, getting employers to voluntarily add an infertility benefit.
Sean, why I think Lee raises such a good point that in many ways infertility has more issues and they tend to be negative. Why is it? What is it about infertility? Is it because people don't recognize it as a disease, or do they think that having children and being able to create your family is optional and not life threatening? Why is it that infertility struggles, it seems like, more than other diseases?
Well, I think there are a number of things that factor into it. One is, you know, this country has a pretty shameful history of dealing with reproductive medicine. You know, keep in mind it was illegal to provide contraception in this country until a 1966 Supreme Court decision. So, you know, it's really not been that long. So we have a long, complicated, and kind of troubled history in terms of providing appropriate care for the reproductive body system. So that legacy certainly impacts infertility. Now, I think very specifically, infertility can be the collateral damage of the abortion wars. Most mm-hmm. people who are seeking to put a stop to voluntary pregnancy termination are really not that interested in making it life harder for infertility patients, but they're perfectly willing to do it if it gets them closer to their goal. So if you are invested in elevating the moral and constitutional status of a fertilized egg in a laboratory, that's going to impact infertility care. That's really not what they want to do, but they're perfectly willing to do it if that's what it takes to help them in their quest to stop voluntary pregnancy termination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, Lee, you mentioned the Dickey Wicker Amendment. Can you, and I realize that this is asking a lot mm-hmm. to say, can you briefly let us know what that does?
Yes, I can. The Dickey Wicker Amendment is a provision in, I believe it's in a budget bill that has to be passed every year, and it provides that no federal funds may be used for research involving embryos that would not be acceptable also to perform on, I think, on fetuses in utero. So
it's actually laid a little bit broader than that. The language is, one, it's an appropriation measure, mm-hmm. not a budget measure. For legislative
yeah.
process nerds. But the language is, you know, basically if it's going to bring any harm to that embryo. So it's really not an analogy to fetal tissue, but to fully developed live humans.
Right.
Interesting. Okay.
So basically, it's very, very, very protective of microscopic cells.
Right. And that certainly impacts research that can be done on
the federal government.
Federal funding for it. Okay.
Exactly.
All right. So for all of those reasons, and Sean did a good job of summarizing, mm-hmm. It's almost an uphill battle because not necessarily even people recognize infertility or the importance of infertility as a disease. But then the collateral damage issue of the wars, the abortion wars. You're exactly right. Fascinating. So if there's a take home message here, for what we need to know about what we can do. Lee, I'm going to let you take us out on if there's a take-home message of this intersection between politics and infertility.
Oh, absolutely, Dawn. To me, the most important thing is that we always come back to the fact that we are about building families. Having children, it's such a societal good, and those are our values. You know, we believe that creating a family is a basic human right. And so if we can talk about this in the way it deserves, you know, in an inspiring way that reminds people of how important family has been to them in some way, I think we really have the power to alter the conversation about reproductive medicine so that people will fall in line, our lawmakers will fall in line and understand how policy needs to serve people trying to build families. And finally, it's up to us, though. If we aren't walking through the halls of Congress, talking to our lawmakers, going to our local state houses, no one else is going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is not something that the other guy will do. We are the other guy, and we have to get involved. And we have to get involved because we care about this issue. Thank you so much, Sean Tipton, Betsy Campbell, and Lee Collins, for being with us today to talk about this very, very important topic. If you're listening to the show, we have a favor to ask. Will you please hop on over to iTunes and give us a rating? It only takes a second, and we are ranked as the number one show in both infertility and adoption, and we would very much like to keep that ranking. So if you would do us a favor, we would truly appreciate it. We've mentioned it a couple of times, but one of the best places to get information on advocating for infertility and across everything we've talked about is the Resolve website, resolve.org. We encourage you to go over there and dive in. It's easy to find the information, so pop on over there, get the information, and get involved. Thanks for joining us today, and I will see you next week.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.